But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I must have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Coffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so we have a league final anyways. Offaly and Derry are going to play in Croke Park next weekend. Offaly agreed to play the match, even though they play Loud the following weekend. And I was kind of thinking then, will Loud agree to play Antrim? And, you know, Loud won a Division 4 league title in Croke Park, you know, a couple of years ago. They're probably all right with that. They'd be probably focused on the Championship. But Offaly, John Mahan, I thought, was getting a little bit carried away. He said a lot of these Offaly players have never been in Croke Park, never mind playing it. So it'll be a nice prize. Alan Brogan, you tell me if any Offaly player has never been in Croke Park. Like, does John Mahan think these lads are from Timbuktu, some pub team that he's after, that he's after scrambling together to bring them all the way to Croker?
Like, you know, John, he's a very enjoyable sort of character. I'm not sure if he realises himself actually how enjoyable he is for us watching him, but it was probably a little bit tongue in cheek. But I suppose the shows we've spoken about before on this show, how important the league is becoming for particularly the Division 3 and Division 4 teams. It's probably, and I've said before, if I was managing one of those things, getting promotion out of one of those divisions is probably the main aim. It's not the provincial championship for those guys, and say that's what John Mahan is looking at. It's an opportunity for those guys to play in Croke Park as well against a team at a similar level to themselves. So why wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I suppose Kildare, Paul Kerrigan and Mayo for the Division 2 final, they're in a different situation in that, you know, they've bigger fish to fry. Mayo, you know, a Division 2 league final, although James Horan didn't rule it out. But, you know, and obviously Dublin Kerry Championship is their main focus, so they're not interested in a league final either. I was thinking just because Loud will turn it down because they're playing Offaly. You know, they have played in Croke Park recently enough.
Yeah, I'd agree with Alan there. I actually was listening to man Shawnee Furlan for Wicklow, and he kind of said, like, this is our championship. Do you know what I mean? So the Division 4, Division 3 teams, the league is massive for them. I was kind of hoping Loud and Antrim would go at it again, to be honest with you, just to see them in Croke Park. But I'd say they probably will turn it down. Like Derry have been transformed this year. So it'd be great to see them get a run out in the league final. And I was kind of looking forward to, there isn't too much coverage of the likes of Loud and Antrim, but or even Derry and Offaly, to see someone like Ian Farrell from Offaly in Croke Park, or some of the younger lads from Loud and Kieran Byrne again, see him back from the AFL. They'll probably turn it down, but it is a pity, because it's massive for them, and this could be the only chance they could get to win a bit of silverware this year, you know. So we ran with Mayo and Kildare. I'd say they have big injuries this weekend, so I'd say they're happy enough to probably give it a skip.
Yeah, no, well, that's the thing. Kildare are riddled with injuries. We'll get to that in a minute. But that's a good point on Loud and Antrim. They would have a double header in Croke Park next weekend. Could even be televised. You know what I mean? Yeah. They should just do it all together and have their players showcased maybe on the television. So Kerry and Dublin are sharing the Division 1 title. How do you feel about that? Your most hated rivals. Maybe not hated. You're half a Kerry man. Maybe the All-Ireland final could double up as this league final, All-Ireland final. Imagine the marketing that will go into that.
Yeah, look, I think from a supporter's perspective, we'd love to see Kerry Dublin again. But I think from the players' perspective, they're probably not too bothered about it now at this stage, I would think. I think they'll be talking the injuries and stuff, I think.
I think Dublin want the league final. Kerry play Clare the following week, so they probably don't.
Yeah, they can't. Yeah, they won't play the week after. But look, I think... I think you'd find Dublin to be happy enough to leave it off as well. I'm sure there's a few knocks coming out of there as well off kind of three or four games in 5 or 6 weekends. So lads will want to spend a couple of weeks now just getting the bodies right. They might take a weekend away or some sort of training camp. I'm not sure how training camps will work out now with the COVID rules and stuff, but I'm sure they have a bit of work to do over the next 2 weeks, and I think they'll be happy enough to do that behind closed doors. But certainly from a supporter's perspective and considering the form Kerry are in now, wouldn't you love to see Kerry pitch against Dublin now again, and just to give us a true reflection of where both teams are at coming into the championship.
Yeah, maybe Dublin could go on one of those historical tours to France, you know, where they don't train on. It's only for a rest. It's only historical. We're not training over there. Here, come here. Listen, I'd say Paul Dublin might like avoiding Kerry in the form they're in. They're in fantastic form. We're going to talk about them a little bit and the football that they're playing in part two. But a couple of bits out of this game. Niall Morgan, like, I mean, a complete headless chicken the other night, right? So, like, what was he doing for Gavin White's goal? It's a pity. TG Cahir obviously had their A team in Breffni Park and they'd only the one camera down in Kerry for this one. So he kicks out the ball. The ball is caught by another player. And then it's transferred to Gavin White, who doesn't kick it immediately, and suddenly Niall Morgan is off his line. Like, I can only imagine he came out and tried to do something with David Clifford, who was just in front of him. It doesn't make sense that he got lobbed in that situation.
Yeah, like, it was a bad kick out. He put him in right pressure with the kick out or whatever it was in the first place. Like, it ended up a 2-on-1 quick transfer to Gavin White. Like, I thought it was a pass initially because it was inside of the boot, and kind of he took his time a bit. But it was an unbelievable score. But I don't know what Morgan was doing. But to be fair to White, there wasn't too much margin for error, and he caught him. He caught him a beaut, really. Like, and you know, might kind of we were on about like Rory Began and Morgan coming out, and might maybe keep him on his line a little bit more. You know.
Well, that's exactly it. And then, like, I mean, that's embarrassing enough for Niall Morgan. Then he decides to run out to the 21 yard line to contest the ball with Tommy Walsh at the end of the game, Alan. Like, I mean, what are you doing there? Tommy Walsh is being marked. Do you think you can run out and outfetch Tommy Walsh and leave the goal completely free? Maybe he'd lost his mind at that stage.
He's the sort of keeper that, like, he's always looking to come out. So I say he plays a lot. We obviously can't see him on a camera at all stages during a game, but I'd say he plays a lot out around he stands a lot out around the 21 yard line, even further out, in the hope that he might get out to take a pass.
It
looks like he's always ready to go.
He's bored in the goals.
And it could have been that he gave his kick out, then he's thinking, just could I actually get involved in this play again? But he is a bit mad, and he does stuff like that every now and again. He doesn't like always get caught, obviously, but like as Paul said, the finish from Gavin White off the inside of the boot, he caught it. Like, he caught it beautifully, and might teach Niall maybe just to hang back a little bit from now on.
Because that is the easier technique off the inside of the boot. Niall Scully had a similar chance, even an easier chance than Gavin White, Paul, you'd almost say, and he went off the outside. Like, I mean, he had time. This has probably happened to all three of us in a game. You do panic a little bit. Like, it's not as easy as it looks. So Niall Scully went off the outside of the boot and drove it a good bit wide.
Yeah, like, as you said, Scully's was a bit closer. I would have thought Gavin White would have definitely went outside the boot because he was out around the 45.
Yeah.
And Scully had a little bit more time. But if it was me anyway, I'd probably be more comfortable to go outside of the boot than inside. Do you know what I mean? Probably go for that maybe a bit of power and drill it over him. That's why I thought Gavin White was top class, really, to be honest with you. You know, but I suppose it's kind of surprisingly Scully went for it. You know, usually the Dubs would kind of work it into a better position, but it was nice to see kind of a couple of attempts like that and keep the keepers in their place, really.
Yeah, exactly. Clifford got a pretty soft penalty, would you say, Alan?
Yeah, I thought it was a little
now,
soft.
Now, McNamee did want to push him off.
Yeah, there might have been a bit of a push, but the fact he got the shot off and stuff, generally a ref would just let that go, even if there was a bit of a push. Like, he had his chance for the goal and look, it got pulled back. He dispatched the penalty very well. He had kind of a funny run up to the penalty too. He did a little bit of a Bruno Fernandes little hop or something on the run up, but he finished it well, to be fair to him. He's a cool customer, to be fair to him.
He is a very cool customer. That's the thing. So Ronan McNamee did try to foul him and put him off, so it was a penalty, but Clifford got such a good shot off, it didn't seem to affect him that much, so we're saying it's not a penalty, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you look for it back, he probably might have thought, I'd say he was a bit surprised he got it himself, to be honest with you, considering he got such a clean shot off. But as we said, he dispatched it. He got the penalty and he dispatched it very well.
He put it away very well. Peter Keane said after the game, being Peter Keane, we have a list of his quotes at this stage, Paul. Like, I mean, this is just absolutely brilliant. I'm starting to like him. He's like a Jim Gavin, but he's just taking the piss. It's more obvious that he's taking the piss than Jim Gavin. Like, I mean, he says there'd be a lot of talk by the virtue of the fact that there was goals, but if you took the goals out of the game, there wasn't a whole lot in the scoreboard at the end of it. Like, I mean, what do you say? You're dealing with this kind of smart arse stuff from the Kerry boys all your life.
Yeah, like, as a fellow, you meet Kerry men in Cork playing against them, and I spend a bit of time down in Kerry, like, Jesus, he takes a piss all together when it comes to the area. Like, you can see he runs a couple of shops by him, like, you know, I suppose the Kerry pressure is, they're under probably, their hype is probably building a bit, so he's probably trying to play it down, but Jesus, to get 6 goals in Division 1 is an unbelievable achievement, like, and to say it would have been close otherwise, like, you know, but he takes the piss with it, to be honest with you. It's just, it's just a bit over the top now at this stage. Like,
it's funny, he said something similar about when they hammered Galway, but Kerry can do that to teams. Yeah. I saw Muggsy tweeting a picture of Mickey Hart laughing after that result, Alan. So, like, I mean, it's definitely a difficult one. There's no doubt about that. Again, we might talk about that a little bit more in part two. What do Tyrone do from now on? They're in the same kind of crisis as Galway were. And what do Tyrone do now? They've conceded 6 goals. Do they try and continue to coach this new game plan? You know, I saw Darren O'Sullivan tweeting, what happened to tough tackling Tyrone who hardly give you time to catch your breath? Like, that's a bigger issue than a systemic issue, you know?
Yeah, I suppose they need to go back to basics now. I think that's a heavy defeat down there. They would have went down there into Kerry's backyard full of enthusiasm and thinking this was a great opportunity to lay down a marker, and like, the game was practically over after 15 minutes, if not before that. So they'd be very disappointed afterwards. And I saw Brian Dewar being interviewed, and he
took a lot of learnings.
He always takes a lot of learnings, but I say there'd be a few hard conversations this week now, because that's not something that you would associate with the likes of Brian Dewar. And you talk about hard work and tackling and stuff like that's what he made his name off. That was the basis of all his play. So if Tyrone can't get that right, it could be a lot, or it could be a short summer for them, whatever. But Kerry just look streets ahead. And even when I looked at the team sheets before, I thought, God, maybe Tyrone aren't quite there. Like, when you look at the forwards Kerry have and stuff, and Tyrone just haven't got that level of quality at the moment.
Now, it's not a good place to be going when you have a bit of an identity crisis and you're trying to change your system, because Kerry they'll just destroy you. Like, I mean, that's the kind of the way it was. Galway went down 4 up in injury time. They threw this away completely, Paul. Like, I mean, it was madness. Pádraig Joyce was livid after the game. He refused to speak to the media, which is unlike him. The Darren Hughes goal. Like, I mean, Johnny Dewan, what kind of defending is this, Paul, where you're standing behind Darren Hughes? Monaghan are desperate at this stage. Now, it was a nice little ball by Cairns into Darren Hughes. You can take it from there.
Yeah, like, I suppose this is the one, like, you'd be on a video analysis, whatever time of the game was, you'd be, geez, the players would be getting killed, like, but that kind of towards the end of the game to equalise it. Like, initially they had him out in the wing, which you'd say fair enough, but then he gave a kick pass in. Galway could have doubled up, no contact, kind of a dribbler of a ball across the goal. One on one, and then Hughes, like, you know, Darren Hughes, the same age as myself, nearly, he left him for dead, you know. And like, the one on one in the square towards the end of the game, they had numbers back around the 13, all right, but geez, the lack of contact and cohesion and protecting the goal towards the end of the game, I'd say it was a bad end to kind of a bad league for Pádraig Joyce, really.
Well, that's the thing, like, Darren Hughes is right footed, everybody knows that. How does Johnny Dewan not know that Darren Hughes is going to turn to his right? Johnny Dewan took a step the other side.
That's the first thing I saw when I saw it. I thought everyone knows Darren Hughes. It's not like this is a player coming in off the bench, maybe you weren't sure who. Like, everyone knows Darren Hughes, knows he's predominantly right footed, so just cover off the right side first, and if he can turn onto his left and score a goal from there off his left, then fair play to him. But he just made it so easy. He was sidestepped away, and it comes back to preparation before a game. Any good defender worth their salt is looking at the players they're marking. What foot is he? Right, I want to push him off that foot onto his left foot, and he just made it too easy for him. Particularly at that stage of a game, just cover goal side and like, at that stage of the game, it's man on man. It's backs to the wall stuff. Just don't let him get an easy shot off, and it was just too easy for him.
That's the thing. And like, I mean, it was a great finish by Darren Hughes, but no way at inter-county level you should be allowed to do that. Shane Walsh with loads of misses. Like, I mean, even allowing Conor McManus, Paul, to get the equaliser, of all people, there was an element of bad luck with Galway with this, because they were fighting like crazy to get the ball back. Who does it, it falls to between Peter Cook and Conor McManus. Conor McManus wins the break. Now, Liam Silk led him inside him terribly easy. Like, he just seemed to, at the point where Conor McManus had that ball, there wasn't a point on.
Yeah, like, they had him twice. I think it was Darren Hughes and Boyle. They had him bottled up almost twice. And like, how many times have you seen McManus kind of come in and hit it off the inside of his right? Like, and at that stage, it was the opposite for the goal. Galway had maybe two defenders in front of their kind of in their box, and there was no forwards in there just to get out, especially McManus. It should be two on him at that stage, you know what I mean? I'd say Pádraig Joyce is probably livid, I'd say, to be honest with you, giving them away.
Absolutely, they're in complete control. Like, I mean, they're in complete control. Yeah. Even the Jack McCarron winning point then, Galway had that ball. It was their one of the subs, number 25, I couldn't find his name, I wasn't sure of it, just hand passed it straight over his teammates. Yeah. head. Like, when you add up all this kind of thing together, Galway, how did they come out of that game, and how did Monaghan win that game?
Yeah, well, that's I suppose the pressure's a game at that level, and you just can't afford to make mistakes, like, especially at that stage of the game and where you are on the field. And it was like they were in control of that last possession. It was just hold on to the ball, let's just work it up the field. They only had to kill a minute or whatever. And now, in fairness to Jack McCarron, he still had a lot of work to do, and it was a beautiful finish, but he should never have been in a position to even get the shot off, because it was Galway's possession. It looked like they'd done the hard work, and then to give it back so softly, I'd say there's a few poor choice. I'd probably be happy with how they performed. They were probably the better side, particularly in the 70 minutes. But I think some of the mistakes towards the end, and as you say, the defending for the goal and giving the ball away for Jack McCarron's point, he'd be absolutely furious with. And they're the little things that the really top teams, just like the likes of the Dublins, the Kerrys, whatever, they just close out a game at that stage. You just wouldn't see Dublin making a mistake like that at that stage. So that's look, lots to work on for Galway. Those sort of pressure moments, high pressure moments in the game, they need to get them right if they want to get to the next level.
I think so. And maybe that's why Joyce was so kind of pissed off down to Division 2 now. And he was kind of talking about All-Irelands when he took over. Like, Rory Began was kind of losing the run of himself towards the game. I know it's panic stations at that stage, Paul, and the goalkeeper will come up. But the thing about Rory Began was up tackling Gleeson. It's not often you see a goalkeeper tackling another goalkeeper. But, like, I mean, he's not actually that good on the ball, Rory Began. Like, he comes out, he's a huge man. He's a bit clumbersome. Like, I mean, you just get near him and it's easy enough to turn him over. But it's not the first time we've seen him. But I suppose, look, they're four down in injury time. We'll give him a pass.
Yeah, he's a big unit, I suppose, maybe. In around the square, it's probably the place for him. But, oh, geez, he wouldn't like him around the middle giving 1-2s and stuff like that, I suppose. He's a great man to come up for the freeze, and he's a big boot in him, but I don't know, I'd say we saw kind of the way Morgan was caught out there. I'd say maybe, I don't know, I'd say that's probably the place for him back there. Maybe up for the freeze, that'd be about it.
Yeah, he's good at the long kick passes from kind of inside his own 21. Did Jack McCarron foul the ball when he showed it with one hand and brought it back to the other hand? Is that, I'm not sure about the technicality of that. I don't want to take away. It was a lovely dummy to sell the Galway player and come back inside on his left.
Yeah, can you show it out wide like skill, that? Like, it's a skill in itself, that sort of dummy with the hand and bring it back in. And yeah, I'd have to see it again, to be honest with you. I didn't notice it at the time, to be honest. I didn't think at the time that he failed it. But yeah, if you move it from one hand to the other, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It was a good finish.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Talking about our Galway player, Roscommon, actually, who went down... they went down without a fight altogether against Armagh, so we're not going to spend too much time. We'll talk a little bit about Armagh in part three in performance of the weekend. Meath and Kildare really went at it. So we saw this on League Sunday last night. Big, huge row. So Meath's Conor McGill got a straight red. He was throwing uppercuts into one of the Kildare players. Now, we presume this was the Kildare player he's accusing of spitting at him. So we don't know if that's true. That's what Meath are saying. We haven't heard anything from Kildare yet. Only one camera at the game, and it didn't catch the start of the fight. So I wouldn't say we'll see any video evidence of this. But, like, I mean, obviously spitting is just disgusting on a football field to begin with, especially in COVID, when it's even more bloody dangerous. So Andy McEntee said Conor McGill is not a fighter. He didn't look too simple, I have to say that. But Andy McEntee says, Conor McGill is not a fighter. Someone spits in your face, what are you going to do? You know, like, I mean, it wasn't much to this row other than the Conor McGill, you know, throwing a few uppercuts.
Yeah, and that's it. And I said, like, I watched it last night, and like, I was watching very closely for where were the punches thrown or where did the red cards come from. And I missed that initially. It was only when they went back over it again that I saw where the punches were actually thrown. And it did look like he was trying his best to hide the little uppercuts, but it did look like the hand was gone. But look, it's hard to comment on, it's hard for us to comment on was there a spit or not. Obviously we didn't see it, but you would hope, and maybe there wasn't, but at the same time I couldn't see Andy McEntee kind of coming out and with something like that, unless his players leading down the garden path a little bit. But like, it was strange obviously to see like, there was a lot of people involved. Didn't look like there was a lot of badness going in. There was a lot of pulling and dragging, but to see two red cards for me, it's not often you see that where it's not balanced out or whatever. And I didn't actually see what the other red card was for, to be honest. But I think it was, look, two close rivals going at it, I suppose. A lot at stake in that game as well. So,
was it a sub goalkeeper getting involved in the mix? A fella with a tracksuit top on him? No, I just wondering, he looked like he was part of a backroom team. And I don't like seeing that.
Coming off. Yeah, it was close to the line, so maybe there was guys standing around there. And look, I'm sure there's no love lost between those two teams there anyway. And they've probably played against each other a good bit over the last number of years. So sometimes it spills over. It's, it's not pretty, but sometimes it does spill over and look to be a couple of suspensions coming out and everyone just move on.
Yeah. What are you like when a free-for-all like that happens, Paul? Do you tend to stay out of it? We know Alan can often start him and then Taylor Caffrey pulls him off into the stand to protect him. I avoided him like the plague. I just reckon if I ran in there, three lads would follow me and I'd be in big trouble. Just avoid them.
Oh yeah, same as yourself, Willie. But like, as Alan said, if anything kind of breaks out near the bench, like, it is a kind of a could go a bit over the top, you know. But I suppose, like, yes, I thought it was the same. Like, there was a lot of kind of that Aussie rules, kind of wrestling and grabbing each other by the collar. It was only afterwards when they showed the punch being thrown. But look, I'd say the suspensions and top of the injuries there is as well as the relegation is probably kind of a bit of a disaster for me, you know.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I mean, talking about the injuries, Alan, Willie Hyland, he scored a goal. There's nothing better than a goal like that from a misplaced point. Like, for a defender, you can't defend it. You think this is going over and then it's just a missed kick. How many times have we seen it? Willie Hyland got the early goal, went off. Paul Cribben went off injured. I think he went to hospital. Kevin Feely hamstring. Willie Hyland had a hamstring. Luke Flynn is going to be suspended. And Daniel Flynn got injured on Friday night. Like, I mean, we're seeing more and more examples of it. Like, the schedule is leading to these hamstring injuries. It was warned before it would start. Like, you just can't go from zero to these, you know, four games in 5 weeks without seeing this.
Yeah, the ground is and the ground is quite hard now, obviously, as well. So the games are very fast, and I think you can see even from say the first week of the National League to the pace of the games yesterday, you can see the pace is really getting up to championship level. And I'd say guys just don't have enough running in the legs at this stage, and kind of generally going into a National League, say in February, whatever, the ground would be a little bit soft. The game isn't as fast, so you don't see those sort of injuries. Whereas now, the players have gone in very quickly with a very short pre-season. Maybe they might have done a bit themselves over the lockdown or whatever, but like, you can't substitute when you're in training. When you're in training properly, you're in kind of match situations. So it's obviously just come too quick for a lot of guys. And especially the teams that are maybe involved in the relegation and the promotion stuff, those guys would have wanted to play. Even if you're carrying a little niggle, it was an important game, so guys would have wanted to play. Maybe you just pushed it a bit too far then, and we've seen a few hamstring injuries, and it's going to be difficult to turn, like, in the space of 2 or 3 weeks to get back from hamstring injuries in time for the championship. Yeah. So it's a difficult time for those teams now going into it. Yeah,
that's the most difficult thing with the hamstring, because when you have the hamstring back right, you know, you might need a game 30 minutes, you might need 45 minutes, back up to 60 minutes, and you'd need to do loads of weights on it to get it back strong. Like, that gives you when your hamstring's healed, you might need another 3 more weeks again, whereas they don't seem to be giving themselves that because the games are coming so fast. Mayo were very impressive in the first half, Paul. Like, I mean, the game was over at half time and they'd lost the two O'Connors, and, you know, you have to give Clare a lot of credit. They fought back really well, and you had your big man Darren O'Neill caused a few problems, although Aidan O'Shea cleaned him out of it in the midfield in the first half. But, like, I mean, Mayo, they're an incredible team really to watch, Paul, in that you'd be looking at the game and you'd be like, how come we don't see the stalemates at either end, you know, that you'd see with Dublin and Donegal the night before? Because Mayo don't do anything sideways. They don't go anyway half pace, three quarter pace. They don't slow the game down. They only know one speed, and that's 100% sprint. And not just a fella with the ball 100% sprint. Three other fellas are absolutely sprinting with all they have in their legs to get up beside them and give them an option off the shoulder. Like, I mean, they're a fantastic team to watch because they're just all out attack.
Yeah, they do everything at 100 miles an hour and at 100%. Like, their support play, their tackling. Like, Keegan O was very good yesterday. I thought he was a bit quieter maybe last year. But, like, you think he's coming towards the end of their career, and then you have Oisín Mullin come in. He's like a prototype of him. Like, he's just, like, the support play, like, that goal in the first half was Mullin to Keegan to Conroy, all just taking their men on. The good thing about it as well is they've, like, we're not going forward 100%. They mark 100% as well. Like Paddy Durkin was picking up Cleary, the centre forward, like, for Clear. Like, and we've seen Keegan pick up Connolly. Like, they're well able to mark as well, you know, and their forward pressure is unbelievable as well. They're a joy to watch. Like, I think Clare probably let them have the ball a bit in the first half, and they just went at him in their support play. Like you had Ruan and Killian O'Connor's up till they went off. Just they play with a handbrake off, really, like, and just go at it.
That's it. That's a philosophy, Alan, isn't it? Like, I mean, there's nothing conservative about Mayo. They just go for it. And, like, I mean, like Paul's mentioned in that Oisín Mullen goal, like, Hessian actually started that move, the other cornerback. Like, and then it was to Mullen, to Keegan. Mullen didn't stop when he saw Keegan getting it. It was given into Tommy Conroy. Who's running off his shoulder? Oisín Mullen is still gone like a bomb and ends up scoring a goal. Like, they got 1-5 from their defence. You know, it is seemed to be all out attack with them. And that's not, they can vary up the play. They got some offensive marks. They gave some great ball into Killian O'Connor. They're running the ball at 100% speed, and they're also varying it with some kicks into the forward line as well. Like, I mean, they're like, I keep repeating it, but especially when, like, we'll talk about this a little bit in part two, Dublin are starting to become almost unwatchable at times. Yeah. You know, like, Mayo and Kerry are by far and away the best teams to watch.
Yeah, we've never doubted Mayo's ability to attack and to play football with the best of them, and we've seen them against Dublin. They probably are the team that's given Dublin the most trouble over the years. Maybe they've kind of waned off a little bit in the last year or two, but certainly over the last 10 years they've been the team that have caused Dublin the most trouble. But I think maybe James Horne saw this game playing against Clare and he said, right, if we go 100% for this, we can overrun Clare, and they did overrun Clare in the first half. They just couldn't live with them. But you'd like to see them be able to show a bit more control, to be able to close out a game a little bit better. Like, they were 11 up, I think, at one stage, and I think Clare got it back to 3, like, yeah. which is a little bit worrying. And look, we know Clare have had a very good year, but they shouldn't and probably aren't at the level that the Mayos are at. So I think there's lots there for James Horan to work on. I think obviously the injuries, seeing Killian O'Connor going off, the way he walked off the field, that looked like a groin injury deep within his groin,
really?
To me. And I've, from my own groin injuries, that was when I hurt it, that was the way he hobbled off.
Did he slip?
I didn't really see where he hurt. It's just, I saw him afterwards as he was hobbling off the field, and that looked really worrying for me now. For Killian, like, if that's a bit of a groin tear or something up in his groin somewhere, like to get back in 3 or 4 weeks' time is going to be a big ask, I think, unless I'm reading the pictures wrong. But he didn't look comfortable coming off at all.
No, he didn't. And one thing was noticeable, I thought, Paul, the way he was walking off, the injured leg, he kept completely straight. He didn't bend the knee. Then I was thinking, is it his knee? Or, like, it's very, there's no confirmation on what happened to him, but it was very innocuous.
Yeah, I thought it was his knee as well at first, but listen to Adam there, but, like, he had no mobility at all. Like, he was just, and whatever it is, and if he's hoping to get back, being a free taker as well is going to be a big part of that. You know, he's a big part of that for him. So I didn't see it either in real time, like Alan, but geez, if he goes out, like, that's their forward line. He's the linchpin inside there. Like, he's going to be a massive loss. But I was kind of looking for it this morning as well to find out, what was there any news in it, but there wasn't really, so kind of waiting to see what it is in the severity of it as well, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And his brother went off as well. I think that was more of a clash as he jumped for a ball in midfield, so they're two big injury worries for Mayo. But Mayo are moving fine, they're back up to Division 1, which is not surprising. Cavan and Tipperary, lads, they're a joke now. Let's call a spade here. They're down to Division 4, and you know what else it is? It's a joke for the teams like Carlow and these teams trying to get out of Division 4, because next year it might as well be written off, because these two, you know, they got their kick in the arse and they'll come back up. So Division 4 is pretty much decided, you know, for next year, which is a joke as well. Sligo, Wexford, all these teams trying to genuinely get up into Division 3, and you have two provincial champions going down to Division 4. It's just not good enough. Like, I mean, obviously credit goes to Wicklow and Longford. Davy Burke, the Wicklow manager, was saying after the game, he says, I've been in dressing rooms after you win a championship with the club, or if you do something well, how you go after it again in the league. That was their hunger, or that was the hunger thing. We wanted lads whispering to Cavan players, do you really want to be here, lads? Do you want to bring it into a battle? And that's what we did. And that's what they did, Wicklow. They brought it into a battle. Cavan didn't want the battle. Now, can you understand how they can't want the battle? I understand the hangover. I remember when we won the Leinster in 2003, we lost the first 3 league games, but then we won the next 4. You know what I mean? You're not a bad team. A hangover is allowed, but getting relegated to Division 4 is not allowed.
Yeah, I think we discussed this on the show a couple of weeks ago, I think, where we...
I didn't think they'd go down, though.
And we spoke about had Cavan the hunger, and was it, as you say, a hangover from last year? And like I said, certainly the effort those lads would have put into last year, is that enough for them? Were they happy with their lot then? And then they come back to it. But as you say, they still should be capable of winning one or two games, and they should be capable of saying, okay, we're in a bit of a dogfight here against Wicklow.
Shit lads, yeah.
We need to win this game. We need to dig it out. And they, like as you said, they weren't able to. Look, to be honest, I think Cavan and Tipperary, well, we know they kind of overachieved last year, but they were big shocks. Cork, after beating Kerry and then to lose to Tipperary, that was very disappointing from Cork as well, even to lose to Tipperary in the Munster final. So I don't think Cavan and Tipperary are quite at the standard maybe where they thought they were last year, and I think this has kind of proved this case. But at the same time, particularly Cavan, they've been in enough big Ulster Championship games against good sides that they should have been able to win that game, and it's very disappointing for them that they didn't. But all credit to Wicklow as well. Davy Burke, in fairness to him, he seems to have a great rapport with his players down there, and he's very committed to that Wicklow job, which I'm sure at stages can be a difficult job, but he's got the most out of them, and I'm sure they're very happy this morning.
Yeah, some great quotes from Shawnee Furlong in performance of the weekend. He scored 2-3 in the game, just how he kind of got himself motivated before the game. I thought it was funny. Mickey Graham said after match, he says, when you get into situations that we found ourselves in at times, you need to make sure that you do have the appetite for the battle, and that's something we've had to question ourselves on. The attitude for a battle, Paul, in a relegation match, to be like embarrassed nationwide by going to Division 4, if you don't have the appetite for that battle, that's very worrying. Or are these lads after saying, I have my Ulster medal, never thought I'd get one, there we go, I'm putting my feet up?
Yeah, you'd be worried a bit about them, because I think it's their third relegation in a row. And I know they've got the two Ulster finals, but Christ, even if you lose your three league games, you still had a once-off game to get out of it. So I'd be with you. I'd be questioning big time what's going on in there. I know they had success last year, but kind of looking at the age profile, the two of them are in two teams are in their prime. And they won a provincial last year. They should be looking to get up the way where Clare are, and to be aiming to get promoted to Division One. But Christ, I don't know, must be something. I don't know, were they missing a lateral injury or what, but and they would have been heavily favoured there now to beat Wicklow and Longford, two of them. So just for win one game out of four, and they couldn't kind of really do it. It's killer from, as you said, down to Division Four. In a row with Cork at the weekend, if they lost, they were down to Division Three, and people were baying for blood, that was happening. But to go down to Division 4 for those type teams is probably a bit unthinkable.
Yeah, they seem to be getting a bit of a pass locally, because Mickey Graham's done such a great job with them, and David Power won a Munster unexpected. So, and obviously 2 years they got relegated, they made an Ulster final. But still though, you see Kieran McGeaney, we talk about him in performance of the weekend. He puts a huge stock in playing the big teams. That might be okay on a one-off year and a good Ulster draw or whatever, but going forward, you won't be a force in any Super 8s consistently if you're not operating in Division 1, probably, maybe Division 2. I'll finish part 1 on a bad note, lads, because Laois went down, lost all 4 games badly. Lost this one by 7. Now, maybe the scoreline doesn't tell the whole story. You have Corbett in goals coming out to punch a ball and punch it into his own net. How he did that, we didn't see the highlights. And then straight after that goal, Laois went down and missed a penalty. So there's our six kind of point swing after Laois playing pretty well in the first half. But Mike Quirk was talking after the game, and he says, in terms of that type of pace and power, we don't have that within our team. That's the reality of it. It's fine saying we should be running the ball with more pace, but if you don't have that weapon, you can't be using it. And Laois probably don't have pace throughout their team, or that power, that running Mayo, everything at a sprint. But here's the thing that Laois do have. They've monstrous forwards. So I don't understand with Mike Quirk. He does a coaching podcast. So these lads that do, I find them a little bit nerdy the way they go on about coaching and overthink things. But if you don't have that pace and power, and you have monstrous forwards, Donny Kingston, Evan O'Carroll, Gary Walsh, John O'Loughlin. John O'Loughlin could play in the half hour. Now, I understand you're going to give in high balls to them all the time. A sweeper will go ahead of them. Laois one of them in there. Laois Gary Walsh in his own, the sweeper stand in front of him, and play your three big men in front of him and pepper them with balls. If you're saying you don't have one thing, I'm showing you what you do have. Why are teams not doing something different, Alan? Where's the innovation from these teams?
Yeah, so, I've heard I've heard his podcast a couple of times. He definitely knows his football, to be fair to him.
No, he's a good pundit, yeah. And look, he's liked as a manager too.
No, he knows his football. And I don't know, maybe there's a bit of a, you know, more about it than I would, but is there a bit of crisis of confidence down there? Maybe, like, they have some good players, like John O'Loughlin. I've played against him lots of times up in Dublin as well, and he's a brilliant footballer, but he probably doesn't have the pace maybe now that he had a few years ago. So maybe, yeah, they need to look at changing how they're playing. But to lose four games is very disappointing. And I think the whole pace and power thing, like if you look the likes of, say, Oisín Mullen and kind of Lee Keegan might be a bad example, but those guys are built really well. There's kind of three or four, even the younger Mayo guys. Look at Paddy Durkin now compared to when he came on the scene four or five years ago. Like, he's a huge man. So are Leash at the same level in terms of strength and condition maybe as some of the other teams? Some of the more experienced teams are playing against, particularly from the back line out, if they don't have the pace or the power there to play a running game. So maybe he probably is looking at it as maybe a longer term project, and maybe they just need a couple of years to get a few lads through to be able to play that style of football.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, it seems to me to be basic logic. I do accept the strength and conditioning, but they would have been in pretty good shape coming on from John Sugrue and continue that on. I don't think they're probably at the level they're going to get to at strength and conditioning. I just don't understand. If you don't have pace within your team, Paul, what goes an awful lot faster than any player is the bloody football. Get it on down the field. Like, I mean, and I've seen Leash enough to go, they're just playing this same version of 13 coming back and two left up and this same up and down the field kind of game. And if you don't have pace and power, you're not getting through in those kind of stalemate games.
No, I would have got the Cork Leash game on GA goal. To be honest, it was the second half. It was nearly a waste of the fiver. Like, you know, they were neither here nor there. They were just a bit ponderous, you know, and hoping to break a line, and they weren't. But they do have big men. Like, if they had everyone, they'd have Lillis, Kingston, Walsh, McLaughlin, Begley. They're kind of reliant on O'Carroll inside to score, you know. I just found them kind of, they had no penetration either way, whether they're going direct or trying to take a man on. So, look, they were relegated in kind of bad fashion. Like, so, look, I'd say they'd probably have to reinvent themselves a bit to not come up the championship.
Maybe. I would like to be, like, why not just be the long ball team and be known, Jesus, you play Leash now. You know, they're not an easy team to play against. They're tackled very hard. They get it down the other end of the field, and, you know, they cause you problems. Why is there no team that we ever describe, like, you know, you see it in soccer, oh, they're a long ball team, maybe not as much anymore. But why can't a team do something completely different to all the other teams?
Yeah, like, if he's playing with men back, he probably doesn't have the men up the field to play the long quick ball. So that's the whole catch 22 about it. But like, in saying that, the lads you've mentioned there, like, there definitely is an option. Like, there's big men in there.
A lot of counties don't have them
that could win their own ball if they played a little bit like that. So maybe they do need to reinvent a little bit and start to trust the lads a bit more. I suppose the game has gone, like, in general, the whole coaching philosophies and stuff has gone very possession based, hold on to the ball until we get it up the field. And I suppose that's what teams want to do. They want to protect the ball at all costs, so they don't spend too much time defending. And I suppose the risk of playing the long ball in is that there's a sweeper back there or whatever, and it's mopped up and it's coming straight back at you again. So I suppose that's it. But he obviously needs to look at something, because it hasn't gone well from this year.
No, it hasn't gone well. And look, to be fair to Mike Quirk, he's not working with an unbelievable, unbelievably talented squad. Like, I mean, they probably are top level Division 3, bottom level Division 2 team, and that's the reality of it. All right, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll come back and we'll talk about this fantastic Kerry team. So Kerry 6-15, Tyrone 1-14. Like, I mean, this is an awful demolition job of a very, very good Tyrone team coming on the back of an awful demolition job of a good Galway team, which almost should have beaten Monaghan yesterday. Like, Kerry are playing football. We talk about maybe not playing Kerry in a league final, Alan. Maybe Dublin might be better off just avoiding them while they're, you know, although they drew with them, I suppose, a couple of weeks ago. So maybe I'm only trying to wind you up. One thing that sticks out for me with Kerry, right, is the kick passing, but not just when someone catches the kick pass, what's happening? Someone is gone past him. You know, like, I see a lot of teams, and even Dublin, Niall Scully will give a ball into Paddy Small or Conor Callaghan, and most people will stand looking at them, hoping to go past their man or take them on. That same interplay isn't there with other teams as Kerry, and they are fully committed to getting up. And a lot of people talking about intensity, and intensity is all about tackling and winning the ball back. The intensity they show to get up there and support that man on the ball. Because you look at it, Stephen O'Brien for the Paul Geaney goal. Stephen O'Brien gives a hand pass to Sean O'Shea, who gave the lovely double back run. Now, wouldn't most teams stand and watch Sean O'Shea and watch how he comes in? Now, Sean O'Shea come in at an angle and he might have fisted over the bar. Paul Geaney wasn't happy with that. Paul Geaney wanted to get up there and get on his shoulder, took a little pop pass, bang, goal. Do you know what I mean? And then the other goal, Darragh Moynihan goal, gives a kick pass across to Clifford, right? Who's there beside him? Sean O'Shea, right? He's supporting that pass. Then Sean O'Shea runs on a little bit, looks inside. Who's back up off his arse? Clifford. Back up again for another pass, committed to get up there to help him out. Because if you don't support the man on the ball, you know, they can only really take their man on, and that's kind of the move over. Pass into Moynihan, goal. Do you know, they are the best at not just kick passing, but getting up to support that pass.
Yeah, like it was one of the best forward display, half an hour maybe, of forward displays I've seen for a long, long time. And it's interesting. We spoke a few weeks ago about... and even last year against Cork, leaving Stephen O'Brien out, and he'd been on the bench for the first couple of league games. Now he has, I think he's figured out how to get Stephen O'Brien into the team, and he's moved Darragh Moynihan up to 14 yesterday. So now they have six really top class forwards. They don't really have a defensive forward in their six forwards at all. So they're going all out. And like it's funny when you look at the Cork game last year, how it's come full circle. Like now he hasn't even got a defensive forward in the six forwards. He's gone all out attack. And look, they showed against Dublin. They were obviously a bit porous at the back against Dublin, but they were solid enough yesterday at the back. So maybe they've sorted that out a little bit as well. They've had a good look at it and they figured it out a little bit. But they're definitely the informed team at the moment. And look, Dublin won't be kind of looking at it quaking in their boots around, but I'm sure they're taking note, seeing like any team that scores six goals against Tyrone or five and a half or whatever is doing something right. And I suppose when you're playing six forwards like that as a defensive unit, you have to mark them all. You can't leave any of them off because they're going to do damage. So I suppose, look, I think there's no question that is the game that everyone's going to be looking forward to later on in the summer. Like, I can't see Kerry making the same mistakes that they made last year and losing the game in the Munster Championship, and obviously we'd expect Dublin to come out of the Leinster Championship. So that is the game that everyone's going to be waiting for. And yeah, look, it's a pity we're not going to see it in the league final. I think at this stage, as I said, supporters would love to see where both teams are at, kind of going up against each other. But I think you're right in saying Kerry looked to be in superior form to Dublin as well, even though Dublin are still winning matches and probably winning them comfortably enough. They're not showing the same level of creativity or the same level of flair that the Kerry forwards are. Far from it, probably, to be honest. They're playing, as you say, they're playing the kind of safe game still, looking to create opportunity. Conor Callaghan, if he gets one-on-one inside, he has a chance of a goal, but apart from that, they don't seem to be creating as many opportunities as Kerry.
No, we'll talk about Dublin in a minute, because that's a very interesting one. Like, I mean, they are very boring to watch now, and even against Kerry, when you usually think Dublin will be a bit more kind of, you know, risky, or play more or riskier football, they didn't really do it against Kerry, which was very worrying from watching Dublin point of view. But I suppose that's the thing, Paul, the six forwards that all need to be marked. We talked about this on the show not so long ago. Tyrone will play four forwards that need to be marked and two workers that you can pretty much let on and do, you know, let them on out into midfield and will stay back covering. You can't do that with the Kerry forwards. Not only that, you want to bring a midfielder back and, you know, cover around the house. Frank Burns tried to do it. He's going to get immediately sucked towards Clifford because he has to be double marked. Now the other five forwards still only have one man on it, you know, unless you're trying to play a very defensive system against Kerry.
Yeah, and like Kerry have Killian Spillane coming on as well, who's in unbelievable form. He can't get into the team at all. Like, yeah. So that's seven forwards like they have that are absolutely flying. Like, what I like about them too is you have Paddy Clifford and Moynihan drop out, and they go straight in from midfield to the full forward line, and they're fierce busy, the two of them. You know, they're kind of something different to your traditional Kerry players, and then they're comfortable on the ball, you know. So maybe teams are leaving them ghost out, and then they're not picking them up as they go back in. But like, I thought, like Tyrone, like if you leave any Kerry team, if you step off and leave them play, they'll play. And like you mentioned, the kicking, they can kick from half back to half forward line, and then they kick back in, kick pass into the full forward line, usually around the D diagonal, is unbelievable. Like, so, and then they can run it hard, as I mentioned, Clifford and Moynihan, and Stephen O'Brien is very direct as well, so they can do it a lot of ways, you know. So they're in unbelievable form at the moment, and they're probably the team to watch, you know.
That's the thing. So, like, Tyrone had the same problem against Kerry as Galway. They weren't tracking the runners, right? So, like, I mean, even Sean O'Shea at the time, McKernan was just standing looking at him. But the tendency, Alan, is for a team, and you're marking a fella and you're kind of tackling him and he gives in a long kick pass. Isn't the natural instinct just to kind of stop? Do you know, well, that's that done now. You know, thank Jesus, thankfully he's given it off. I'm wrecked. But now Clifford and Minehan are following these and Sean O'Shea, they're doing those support runs after a kick pass and they're losing their men very easily because Tyrone are not used to, they're not used to dealing with this. Usually they're inside the 45 looking out. So they don't have to follow a man back with their facing their own goal. It's a little bit alien to them. And Galway as well.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's like they say, the man that gives the kick pass off or gives the hand pass off then becomes the most dangerous player on the pitch, because just for that split second he's not watched. And as you say, when the lads were giving him the kick pass, they weren't waiting to see where the pass is landing and what was happening. They were just making the support runs. And I think they probably caught Tyrone a bit unawares then. They fell asleep for a second or two, and that's then too late. It gives the Kerry forwards had a yard or two, and like to be fair to them, it was obviously something they were working on, because they followed up every pass that went in. They followed it up with a support run straight away. As you said, there was support runs coming from everywhere, and particularly the Clifford one for Moynihan's goal. I think he kind of appeared from nowhere and gave a lovely little hand pass across to Darragh Moynihan. It was a beautiful goal. Like, no defence could have stopped it, to be honest, but yeah, I suppose that's what you get when you play with six forwards like that seem to have a very good understanding and are all playing for the team together and all playing very unselfishly. You can get some beautiful football played, and that's particularly Darragh Moynihan's goal, I think, showed that perfect. That goal was a team that were playing for each other, that were playing unselfishly, that were playing with lots of support and lots of pace, and that's what came at the end of it when you have the quality with that.
But you know yourself, Paul, from playing in the full forward line, and you know, if you've no one up supporting you and you win the ball with your back to goal, you know you're very predictable because you can only take on your man. And to bring the Dublin example again, they'll kick it into Paddy Small. Paddy Small might go at his man, might realise, this isn't on. There's no other option now but to send it back out to around the 45. That's boring. Unless you have fellas up to support that kick, whether it's the kicker. And one big thing Mick O'Dwyer always told us when you kick the ball in, always follow it. Always give them an option. And not just the person who kicked it, because I often played wing forward and I loved taking a pop pass off the full forward line, and I'd stand around completely disinterested, and the minute a midfielder kicked it, I'm gone in after that, and the back isn't paying attention. All he's doing is looking at a midfielder kicking a ball in, and he thinks, oh well, look, my man, usually they'll mark you if you go short for it. But if that ball goes in and you just maybe take a step or two short and then turn around and sprint like your life depended on it, you're getting that pop pass. You know, the point I'm making is this is pretty traditional stuff Kerry are doing. There's no huge kind of secret to it. I think they're catching teams like Galway and Tyrone out who are not used to marking players like this for the last 10 years.
Yeah, I suppose there's two things. Like, Kerry, traditionally, their kick pass is so good and the ball in is really good, you know. Generally, there's a fella, it's to the man's advantage receiving it. And you know if you're coming off an inside forward shoulder, like very often, like Alan said, they're so unselfish. If you get it more times than not when you're coming off a fella's shoulder, you continue to make that run. Like, you know, so there's two or three coming off them all the time. And like, you look at Shawnee O'Shea and Clifford, they're their two best forwards, but they're so unselfish. They're involved in so many scores. So if they're setting the tone, like, others will follow. So it is, they're bringing it back a bit, you know, and maybe teams are struggling with that direct ball and that support play. And like, teams are so fit now, they'll get up and down for that support play constantly. And if they keep giving it, then there's unlimited options from really, like, you know.
And that's the thing, Alan, if you get your ball in the full forward line, you're happy to lay off the odd one. Now, you wouldn't lay them off an awful lot, but you would like to lay the odd one off, because that then your man's guessing what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if Paddy Small gets it for Dublin, what's this man going to do? He has to take me on.
Yeah, like, I think
I keep using the poor Paddy Small example, but
the cat is probably out of the bag a little bit with Kerry now as well. Like, if I was Dublin, or if you're anyone preparing to play against Kerry and you're looking at that game yesterday, you can see, right, when they're giving the ball in, they're going in after it very quick. So defenders, like, as you said, I often kind of acted like I wasn't interested in the game as well, and I'd be waiting. And a good forward, smart forward, would know, I'd know where the ball was landing, or roughly where the ball was landing. So I'd be getting myself into a position to make that run quickly to try and catch the back off guard. And you catch a bad back off guard, you wouldn't catch the good backs off guard because they'd be ready for it. So I think teams looking at Kerry now are going to have to start preparing for that and saying, look, you can't switch off for a second. There's going to be support runners coming from everywhere. So as soon as that ball is going in, you need to prepare. You have to be goal side your man and be prepared to get back with him because they're going to support the ball into the full forward line. Now, you can say the cat out of the bag is still not that easy to stop because of the quality they have. But I don't think Dublin would be quaking in their boots just yet. I think with the six forwards Kerry have, I think Dublin have six good backs that would be well capable of marking them. And the only thing is then, as you say, if you're playing six forwards up like that, it means there's space back in your back line as well for a good forward line to operate in. So I think Dublin would probably fancy a game like that where they have space in the forward line to attack. And I think Dublin could maybe be playing within themselves a little bit at the moment, probably not showing all their cards on the table at this stage. And I think there'll probably be a few more strings to Dublin's bow later on in the summer, despite what you think at the moment.
They'd want to shape it up because, honestly, Dublin are, we'll get to in 1 second. Just to leave this game, Paul, what did Tyrone do here? Like, I mean, do they stick or twist? Like, how do they fix this? They've got kind of coming on from the very first game where they were very impressive. Paul Donaghy's gone off form completely, taken off the last couple of games. Conor McKenna's form right throughout the league has been desperate. It's like everything should be going through him and it's not. It's like he's outside of every game. Like, I mean, it's really worrying. They've conceded six goals. They're trying to play a more open style. Alan just said you won't catch good backs out with, you know, looking disinterested and getting up there. You'll catch Tyrone backs out because I'm not sure that they're bad backs. I think that they're not necessarily used to this. They're trying to learn everything on the hop. They've had no pre-season. They have a new management. Like, how good are the management to actually coach these defenders in a more open game? There's lots of questions kind of there for Tyrone now.
Yeah, like Willie spoke a few weeks ago about them probably being the most exciting team we were looking forward to seeing in the league. But geez, they're probably the team at the end of it who have the most questions. Geez, I know we were talking about their old culture of being kind of blanket defence and that coming out of it, and how they'd get kind of come out of that as a team. But I don't know, do the management know what their best 15 is going into championship? You know, like in the forward line, McKenna's been woeful, like you said. You know, we were hoping for big things from him. Like Bradley, Lee Brennan, McCurry, Donaghy, they've all been in and out of the team. Matty Donnelly's been moved all over the place, you know. So I think they have an awful lot of questions. And Canavan, who look good, is probably under right pressure, you know, for championship. I don't know, I'd say they'll definitely have to tighten up the back a bit, and they will probably sacrifice the forward, you know, like Tiernan McCann came on and done all right at the weekend and they might put him a wing back, you know, but I think they're under a bit of pressure, to be honest with you. They've Calvin out in a few weeks' time, I think. So look, I think they have massive questions over him coming out of the league.
Yeah, Tiernan McCann looked good when he came on. I was thinking of Peter Hart and Niall Sludden, the two wing backs. Completely forgot about Tiernan McCann. I hadn't seen him all year and his name completely. I'm not sure about his man bun now, but I let him off with that. Let's talk about Dublin here quickly. Me and Brendan Devaney had an argument the other night on WhatsApp messages, so we couldn't interrupt each other. We both had to give each other our full speak because they were on voice messages. So he was disgusted with Dublin, right? So this is what the argument is about. He says, what kind of... these are the greatest team of all time, and they go out there and they play that kind of crap that Donegal were playing, and it was a terrible game to watch. These should be pioneers for the game. They should be out playing attacking football. And my argument back to him was, Brendan, they were 1-15 to 10 points up. The game was over. This is what's winning them football. So here's the big question. Do Dublin continue to play boring, horrible old football that's beneath them, I think, and continue to win? What motivation is there for Dublin to change this, Alan, I suppose is the point? They're six-time All-Ireland champions. Like, they have evolved a lot over the 6 years, you know, to pretty risk-averse, boring, lateral, slow, none of the Mayo 100-mile-an-hour kind of attack that we'd be used to maybe from Mayo. But why would Dublin change, you see? That's the big question.
Yeah, like, their play probably has become very systematic over the last couple of years, and I think it'd be interesting to see if they go behind in a match, when they have to come out and they have to attack. And I think until we see that, we probably won't see that that full free flow in Dublin football that maybe we were used to a few years ago. I think the way they start off games, they try and get a lead. If they get a lead, then as I say, they play very systematically and they'll hold on to the ball and they'll kind of look for gaps. And they're probably used to teams playing with a lot of men back against them as well. So maybe...
So they've developed this system because of that?
Yeah, possibly. And maybe they're not let, like you can't... Like they're not let kind of play that free-flowing, quick kick passing ball because there's so many men back against them. So they're forced to play this systematic hold on to the ball, as we spoke about last week. Look for the gap. Wait until somebody makes a mistake. Wait until somebody falls asleep in the back line, and that's where you penetrate. Then, so that's why the game against Mayo, if they play Mayo later on in the summer, or a game against Kerry, will probably be a little bit more open because those two teams will come out and they leave some gaps in behind for Dublin to play in. Whether Dublin will be useful at that stage to even spot those gaps is the other thing. Yeah. They are a long time playing like this now, but I think it'd be good to see them go behind in the game at some stage and just see them come out and have to claw back a lead maybe and see what they're... But look, it's difficult. Like, it's still difficult to be... judgmental of them, whatever. Like, these guys, some of the greatest footballers of all time, and... Who are we to tell them how to play the game, Willie?
Well, that's the thing. Well, I can tell them what I like to watch. I can definitely tell them what I like to watch, and I don't like watching them now. Now, I have to say this in their Dublin's defence, because I was defending Dublin with Brendan. Brendan was going mad, and I said, you're being biased towards Donegal. I said, Donegal were disgraced the way they approached that game. A young up-and-coming team in a neutral venue against the six-time All-Ireland champions, and they rolled over. They never tried to go at them at all. They played a game that Dublin will beat them at 10 times out of 10. So I was really disappointed in them. Understand the championship in 2 weeks' time. But at the same time, you look at Dublin, Paul, and they played Kerry in those two All-Irelands 2 years ago. Now, they were two of the best football games I'd seen in at least 10 years. So Dublin will come play you. I never really blamed. I think Dublin have developed this horrible style in response to what they were facing and have been risk averse, because being risky with kick passes with sweepers is silly. And we'd be criticising Dublin if they went kicking too much the other night. Hugh McFadden started intercepting them, and you'd be saying, geez, that was naive by Dublin. Do you know what I mean? So it's a difficult one to be too critical of them, because I thought Donegal's approach was a similar approach to 3-4 years ago, which Dublin are happy to take it through the hands, you know, against.
Yeah, if you feel any bit kind of inferior to Dublin, you're probably naturally going to step off them, and they have so much of the ball. Maybe it's Barra, Kerry and Mayo are the only team that will step up them a bit more. Like, I suppose we would have played them a couple of years ago in the Super 8s, and you always have in your mind that, Jesus Christ, they could open up and give us a hammering. Like, so you're probably going to be that bit more naturally defensive. And look, the Dubs, 80% of the teams against them play that way, you know, so they have most of the ball and they're taking all the high percentage shots. And I'd say maybe that kind of safety and playing that safe way probably works in favour of you if a player trying to get into the Dublin team, you know. So I thought that game at the weekend, geez, was a tough watch, to be honest with you. It was kind of a real challenge game, kind of as a spectacle. But I agree with Alan, it's only when they played the Mayo or Kerry Crow Park in a big game that you might see it open up a bit. And I'd have no fear that they'd be well able to do that once that happens.
It's funny, Paul, you mentioned there about players coming into the team and kind of playing in that similar style. Like a couple of years ago, my own club mate, Sean Bugler, was breaking through, and he's a really, really, look, we've seen him for a couple of years now, but he's a really, really exciting footballer, real pace, can carry the ball at pace, can score, really good eye for goal. And he got a few runs 2 years ago, I think, in the championship. And he was playing very safe. From what I know of him, he was playing very safe, like that he'd win the ball, he'd hand pass it, looking for the gap and stuff. And we're thinking, he's just like, this fella's all the talent in the world, and he's trying to nail down a spot in the team. And you know, to nail down a spot in the team, you need to do something different. You need to make a mark for yourself. Yeah. And he never really did it for me, even though I knew it was in him. But obviously it wasn't his fault. He was playing his role in the team, and he knew what his role was and stuff. And so it's difficult for lads coming in who are trying to make a breakthrough, because they're encouraged to play within the framework, within the style of play, that sometimes you need, if you want to get into the team, you need to take a bit of a chance, go and get yourself a goal, so you don't give a manager an option to leave you out the next day. And
Following that kick pass.
Following, I think a lot of the guys, now Sean did very well in the championship last year, but Yeah, like it's funny when a fella's coming into a team like that there's really good footballers, but they're not maybe standing out as much as they could because they're not taking those chances. They're just playing within the system that Dublin have there at the moment.
Yeah, it's a pity. It's a pity. I understand it. It's just it's gone. I think they've gone through to brought it to new levels where they're refusing to take any risks at all. One big mistake against Dublin, just before we get into performance of the weekend, Paul, is like Alan was explaining here a couple of weeks ago about how, you know, they'll hold on to it, they'll wait for someone to lose concentration and then the hand pass goes. Now here's the thing against Donegal. Like Donegal are dropping kind of inside the 45. They're leaving the two or three players outside. Now against Dublin, that's absolute madness because generally Dublin don't do that. They might drop back, but they'll make sure to push out around midfield, because if you leave lads out around midfield with no pressure on them, they'll have all the time in the world to wait until, you know, that run is made and then that perfect pass is given in. Whereas if you push out on those three or four players and make sure you're slapping at them, it makes it an awful lot more difficult for them, right, to wait and be patient for that lovely little run or give that perfect hand pass. And I think that's a mistake that teams make against Dublin that Mayo and Kerry won't make, is that they will not allow those free players, you know, wait for that. Every player should be under pressure on the field, and that makes that little bit harder for Dublin.
Yeah, like I was watching, especially the Kerry in the league, when they played us last year, they were dropping back to the D and inside their 45, but they kept pushing out a little bit further this year. So if the ball was around the 45 and it got popped back to midfield, they'd push out with the ball, you know.
Yeah.
So if they turned it over, they'd turn it over a little bit higher up the field, and then they could use their kick pass to get out. I think you have to do that. The other issue then is just they have so much of the ball. It's just that fitness issue of trying to do it continuously for 60, 70 minutes. It's going to be so tough. But I agree with you. I think you have to put a little bit more pressure, because the likes of Kilkenny and Fenton will just come around the middle and just dictate the pace, and then they'll go up and down the wings and work the high percentage shot maybe kind of on a loop around the D like they did at the weekend, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what they do. Oh yeah, one other one, Alan. Ryan McHugh on Kieran Kilkenny, that was a surprise. Like, and one thing I was disappointed in Dublin is Kilkenny's been in and out of the full forward line. He spent nearly his whole game on the half forward line. If I'm Dublin manager and Ryan McHugh pairs off against Kieran Kilkenny, I'm saying full forward, yeah. Kieran. Like, I mean, I thought, so it's just a small thing, you know. Like, I mean, I know Desi's not there, Mick Galvin is there, Desi will be back the next day. I just thought that was a little thing that immediately you would bring Ryan McHugh somewhere he doesn't like to go, and Kilkenny's perfectly happy there.
Yeah, it's probably a funny matchup, even if he was out on a half forward line, to be honest with you. But yeah, look, as I say, I think like there's Dublin probably aren't showing their full hand yet. That game yesterday probably didn't mean a huge amount. So I think they're happy enough to go out and play the way they're at. I think if you found if that was in the summer in Croke Park, you probably would find Kieran Kilkenny heading into the full forward line. But I think
he nearly do it on his own without even being asked.
He's a very smart footballer. Like, he would have twigged that definitely. But I think like Kieran's another man a little bit like that, who I know is all the talent in the world. I've watched him for a long time, and for a long time I thought, God, he doesn't take any chances. Doesn't really, like, it took him a long time to even score a goal for Dublin. But as I said, who am I to judge Kieran Kilkenny? But he's a very smart footballer, and he plays the game as he sees it. And he'd have known in the back of his mind yesterday, this probably isn't the place to be shown a full hand. But I think if it was the summer, you'd have seen a different story there. Yeah,
that's true. They're very nice words for Kilkenny, considering he retired you. All right, performance of the weekend next.
Right past the baton on to me.
All right, so performance of the weekend. First nomination is Brian Hurley. Paul, I'll give this one to you. 1-4. He only came on in the 35th minute. Like, I mean, anyone listens to the show knows I'm a huge Brian Hurley fan. And as we've said before, he allows Cork have more of a kicking game because he's always showing. Luke Connolly, some of the passes, absolutely beautiful. Mark Collins back on the field. Ronan McCarthy said after the game, I think we're in great shape going into the championship. Is he right?
We conceded 25 points, I suppose, against Westmead. So, I think they've had a lot of injuries, and they had a lot of injuries coming into the league. Look, attacking-wise, I thought towards the end of the Westmead game, they nearly had all their best players. Like, Hurley and Collins, when they came on, kind of got them over the line. I'd say Luke is probably their most important forward. And the only thing was Colomani went off injured. Like, if you had the four of them up front, they're all ball players, and they would be a match for most teams. I think defensively, I think they need to get a few fillers back. But look, I suppose they won 3 out of 4 of their league games. It was a normal year, they'd be in the promotion hunt. But I suppose it's just conceding big scores has been a bit of a problem.
Right. Okay. So you like? I mean, yeah, 25 points against Westmeath. I think Westmeath had something like 14 points in the first 15 minutes or something crazy like that. Maybe they tightened it up after that.
Yeah, they had 11 points after the first water break, like, which was...
Jesus.
And they could have had a goal. The same fella, I think O'Toole could have had a goal either side of half-time and they would have been under a bit more pressure. But look, they came good in the third quarter, Cork. They got two goals and I think it was 2-7 or something and that got them through.
Right, OK. Oisín O'Neill and Rian O'Neill, and giving these two a nomination together, like, there's no doubt these fellas are the future of Armagh football. There's absolutely none. And I kind of criticised Rian last year a little bit for playing a bit inside himself and not kind of dominating games. But they're certainly getting on top of games now. They're incredibly talented. Andrew Mernon, back yesterday, he played full forward. Oisín and Rian were taking turns at midfield with Niall Grimley. And now you've got some big men. I'm a big fan of Mernon. And while I jumped off the Armagh bandwagon last year, maybe I'm going to start believing in them a little bit more. Like, they definitely deserve to stay in Division 1. It would have been a bit of a travesty after beating Monaghan and drawing with Donegal, you know, to be going down, Alan. It would have been very harsh, you know, but they were very convincing winners against a team who often beat Armagh, you know, in recent years. So it just shows the level of improvement that they're at.
Yeah, they are. They've probably been maybe the team of the league. I think we've spoke about them every week we've been here, and they look, the two boys especially, look full of confidence, and the way they're playing football, the scores they're kicking, but look, the proof is going to be in the pudding in the championship for Armagh. They need to win a big game in the championship, and like I'd say, deep down, Kieran McGeaney knows that. He knows they probably haven't before that. They haven't performed that well in the championship over the last number of years, so they need to take a scalp there.
They need to beat a Donegal or a Tyrone. That's their next step, you know. Like, I mean,
and this is a huge championship for them. But certainly coming out of the National League, they look like a team that can cause problems in Ulster, and I've been very impressed. And they look like they're a real footballing team as well. Obviously, yeah. Kieran McGeaney brings a hard edge himself to it, and I'm sure they won't shy away from any battle, but they do look to have really, really nice footballers, particularly the two lads, and they're the sort of footballers you'd be excited about seeing them in a bit of space in Croke Park. So it'll be great to see them back there later on, and as I said, look, with the height respect for Kieran McGeaney, I think he's a very good manager, a very committed manager, and the sort of fella you'd love to play under, and he looks like he's getting the most out of Armagh.
Yeah, there's a lot of hugs going on after the game. Like, I mean, you've Grugan in there, who's a very clever player. You've Stephen Campbell, who's a very player. I've been critical of them, Paul, lacking a little bit of pace, I thought, last year against Donegal, to try and break those lines. In a footballing game, which they probably get, you know, they're probably getting more of now, which, you know, teams have turned the corner from. They always struggled against teams that went back ahead of the ball and kind of waited, because their kicking game was kind of null and void at that stage.
Yeah, like, they've been probably one of the most enjoyable teams to watch in the league. Like, you probably have written them off at the start because they haven't done too well in the Ulster Championship and they were the Ulster side of the league. But, like, they have some big, like, the two O'Neills, Grimley and Charlie O'Burns, like, they're big, mobile men. Like, and I think they have a focal point in the full forward line now, you know, as well, with Grugan and Forker inside, or is it Campbell? So, but they're a really good team to watch. I think what they do need is that big win, and it would be interesting to see when they do meet one of those big teams in Ulster how they deal with that blanket in front of them and that counter attacking. But like you mentioned there, like, even Jamar Hall, he brings great pace to the team and that. Like, so, look, it remains to be seen, but like, you'd be happy for them that they stayed up the way they played throughout the league.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely ones to watch. Shawnee Furlong scored 2-3, and this is what Shawnee said after the game. He says, "We just felt we were looked down upon today. Even when we came to the stadium, they were warming up on the pitch and we were put out the back. I just felt they were up there and we were down here. They just don't give us the respect. When I saw that, it drove me mad. Maybe they didn't, but that's the vibe I got." Now, this game was played in Navan. This wasn't played in Breffni Park. Like, Cavan had no control over whether they played out or they warmed up on the pitch in Navan, and the pitch out the back, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did Shawnee make up all this in his head? You know, like Michael Jordan in that documentary used to make up scenarios in his head that someone had said something or disrespected him just to get motivation? Because I'm reading these quotes going, "Cavan couldn't have disrespected you, Shawnee. This was in Navan, when they have no control over where anyone trains."
Yeah, I suppose you find an edge whatever way you can, and like, it certainly looks like something annoyed Shawnee for coming out with those comments, and and to score 2-3 off the back of it then.
And Shawnee's around a long time, works, like he's a lovely left foot on him. Like he's a kind of an old school burly full forward.
Yeah, but to score 2-3 is good kicking, to be fair to him. And look, it's a great win for him. As I said, you find your edge whatever way you can. And I think there's no doubt Wicklow are more up for that match than Cavan, and Mickey Green spoke about it as well when the game was in the mental pot. Cavan didn't want to know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Jack McCarron got 7 in total, Paul. 2 frees, 5 from play. He came on after 11 minutes. That's kind of like, I don't know what it is about Jack McCarron. I think sometimes his mentality, then again, maybe he's a forward that's come out of very defensive Ulster football. He just doesn't like it. He doesn't like playing against it. He likes a bit of space. He likes to be able to use that lovely left foot. But I don't know, when there's expectations on him, he doesn't deliver. Like coming on as a sub there, I'd say, in that game, he's like, there's no pressure on me whatsoever, and he gives a performance that he's capable of.
Yeah, I suppose when he broke on first, you saw that left foot, you're saying, geez, this fellow would be a good compliment to McManus inside, like.
Yeah.
But then he's in and out of the team, but geez, he was unplayable at the weekend when he came on. Like, he reminds you a bit of Paul Finlay, the way he strikes the ball. I remember he played man in, but yeah. Just natural, like, just have a quick look, get it one hand and swing it over, just that natural arc with his left leg. Geez, I thought he was brilliant yesterday, and then to kick the match winner in extra time. His kicking, the way he just let them stretch the field that bit more, you know. He kind of kept the presence up there and kept putting them over and kept Galway honest, you know, and they just couldn't deal with him.
Yeah, exactly. Keane Farrell deserves a shout out here from Offaly. Scored 7 points, 2 marks, 2 from play and 3 frees. We saw his first point off the left in the first half on League Sunday last night. It was beautiful. Now, what I'd say to Keane, he's a big man, a good target man. He's only 20. You're going to have to work on the right foot, mate. That was a bit of an awkward angle. That was a beautiful point off the left foot. Offaly, I'm looking forward. I hope that's on television. I'm looking forward to seeing them in a full game and seeing, like, they must be incredibly excited to be playing in Croke Park. You know, fellas like Keane Farrell, Anton Sullivan scored 4 from play. He's around a long time doing it. Do you know what I mean? Just being able to be on a national stage.
Yeah, there's probably the most amount of excitement around Offaly football, I'd imagine, since I think we played him in the Leinster final in the mid-90s back.
But you did, 06 maybe, was it?
06, a good, whatever that is, 15 years ago. So they've had it hard since around then, since that team kind of went away. So I'd say there's a bit of optimism down there. Obviously the hurlers are going well as well, so I'd say the camp is happy. Shane Lowry's putting it all down to himself since he announced his sponsorship with them. They haven't lost a match in football or are hurling, I don't think.
And Leash haven't won a game in hurling or football, I know.
Jesus. No, it's working.
It's definitely working. Final one, I'll give this one to you, Alan. Paddy Small. Like, he wasn't even nominated for Man of the Match. I think, who was it on the COCOM? Coleman Goggins, I think it was. I'm not sure, but it was Kieran Kilkenny or Conor Callaghan nominated, and I'm convinced this is TG Cahir. They've got Irish, and they're going to be interviewed in Irish. And yeah, Paddy Small is just going to speak in English. Paddy Small deserved to be nominated for that. He scored 1-2. He was the liveliest of the forwards. He was better than Kilkenny, probably on a par with Con.
Yeah, he's quite actually like you talk about the Dublin forwards a lot, and playing it safe and kind of looking for. In fairness to Paddy Small, he does. He's not afraid to take on a man. He is quite direct when he decides to be, and he's kind of getting, he's the sort of player you think, when we get to the big games now, Paddy Small mightn't be in the team. Yeah. But he keeps performing, and he's getting, like, he's clocking up scores. He'd won 2, he's clocked up good scores in the National League, so he's making a name for himself, I think, and he's probably proven some people wrong. That people might have thought he might have been a panel player, maybe in the team for a while and out of the team for the bigger games, but he's slowly but surely becoming an important part of that Dublin forward line, or Dublin full forward line.
I completely agree. He's won me over. Yeah. I was a bit like you, kind of thinking, right, he's in for Mannion. He's not as good as Mannion. He won't, you know, he'll be in and out. But it looks like he's a regular now. Like, I mean, I would like to see players supporting him a bit more for the hand pass, that he doesn't have to do the same, you know, take him on all the time. But you're right, he's not afraid to shoot.
No, he's not. He's a good forward. He's accurate. Probably a little one-sided. If I was to pick out a forward,
doesn't seem to get caught with it though, that way, does he?
Like, no, you don't, he's probably a little bit like, he's probably a little bit like Paddy McBurt. He doesn't get caught either. He probably has that little jink or whatever, that he can always get that yard of space to get the shot off with his left foot. But no, he is, he's an exciting forward, and he's getting better.
Yeah, he definitely is. Right, so performance of the weekend. I'm going to give it to Shawnee Furlong for making up a completely incorrect scenario in his head and motivating himself to score 2-3 and keep Wicklow in Division 3, which is a fantastic achievement for Wicklow. They struggled so long to get out of Division 4. And imagine if they had gone down. They're stuck down there with Cavan and Tipperary still down. So there's some more of that, Shawnee. Just like Michael Jordan, just make something up in your head and motivate yourself to go out. And the rest is history, as they say. Right, so Shawnee Furlong, performance of the weekend. Right, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll be back on Thursday and we'll do a show. We'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Cuffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."